Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Legend Rouge Cycling Podcast for the recap of the men's Paris-Roubaix, starting from Compiègne to Roubaix. This is at least somewhat nearer to Paris, Compiègne, but not in Paris. But we don't care about that. The Giro is going to start in Albania next year, apparently. It's close, close enough. This episode is brought to you by Join Cycling, the LRCP official training partner. 260Ks long. The first 100Ks are not flat, but they don't have cobbles on them. There's actually some rollers in there before 29 cobbled sectors finishing in the Roubaix Velodrome. The first four are actually, in my opinion, some of the hardest and longest in the race. Quite decisive, particularly the new Briastre sector after the Saint-Pithon sector. Then there's a flatter, it chills out a bit to Denain. Then there's Avluy-Wallaire, Entruay-Darenberg, a four and five star sector, which will open up the race. And then there's Mons-en-Pavel, Carrefour de l'Arbre, Orchy-les-Orchy, around 60, 50Ks to go as well. Before it actually gets easier after Carrefour de l'Arbre. Well, easier, 15Ks of mostly tarmac to the finish. So 55Ks of cobbles. Big strong tailwind, actually, mostly tailwind, a little bit of crosstail somewhere, but big strong tailwind from the south. I think it was southwesterly today. Any news this morning, Benji?
Yes.
Free race. Oh, there was.
Exactly. Dylan van Baarle out of the race. DNS. Michael Vink and Morkov as well, but let's be honest, those two weren't necessarily going to influence the race as much as a van Baarle would. So that's something there. We already spoke about Pidcock being present a few days ago on the podcast, and that is indeed happening. He is in this race, and I don't know. I was going into this race with less hype than previous years, but it's still Paris-Roubaix for me, you know, because Paris-Roubaix is like, it's my favorite race on the calendar. It's that race that I think about. It's got this captivating finish in the Velodrome. After so many cobbles, it's really an epic fight between riders the entire time, and I was curious where it was going to open up, because I gotta be honest, I went into this race kind of expecting, if you look at Alpecin, you look at Trek, you're looking at two teams that they don't actually need to open it up early. Like, Pedersen would probably want to leave it as late as possible, and Alpecin's strong enough that they can decide whenever to open it up. So, I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting an opening as early as we saw today on today's race, but before we get into that, let's talk about the breakaway first. And to be honest, when it comes to that breakaway, the fight for the breakaway in this race is always chaotic as fuck, right? Because you've got a very fast opening. I think it was around 55-ish K per hour first hour, which means very fast. And that is because everybody wants to be in the breakaway, because if you go back in history, being in the breakaway allows you to be ahead once the favorites behind are just smashing it, which means that when they catch up to you, you're in a thin down group. You didn't have to fight for positioning when the favorites were fighting it in Trois-d'Arenberg, for example. You were ahead when that happened, stuff like that. So that's how Adelier went to podium this race. Heyman ended up winning this race from the breakaway. We always see anticipation moves really delivering in this race. But anyway, breakaway, Bertrand Hagenes from Visma, Rasmus Stiller from UnoX, Kasper Asgreen from Sudal's Quickstep. That's like, going into this, when you see him in the breakaway, you still have that feeling of like, okay, it's Kasper Asgreen. But reality is that Kasper Asgreen 2024.
Kasper Asgreen doesn't exist. He's an illusion.
It's basically Kasper Pedersen, Kasper Asgreen's body. But anyway, Marco Haller, Liam Slok, Gleb Siriza, and Kamil Malecki. Once again, Malecki. Honestly, shout out again. This guy, it wasn't sure whether he could ride his bike anymore a few years ago in 2021 when he crashed and broke his pelvis, and now he's got a top 15 at RVV, and he might actually be in the running at this point with this breakaway. to get into the final of this race. So I was having an eye on him, but also on everybody in this breakaway. What will Hagenes do? Because he was one of those riders going into the World Tour thinking, okay, this is pretty great, right? But anyway, breakaway aside, on to you, my
friend. Were you surprised? Well, I was surprised it formed without... Last year, the break went to 170Ks to go, 100Ks, 2 hours of fighting. The Heyman year, where the break still won, where he won from the break went after 80Ks there too, with crosswind and tailwind. And that was 2 hours nearly of fighting. And RVV last year, it was a lot of fighting. But then, RVV last week, it was weird. The break went so easy. It was really strange. And then today, I was like, where's Jayco? Yeah. Where's Jayco jumping in this break with Valshide? Where's Trek jumping with Edward Turns or somebody? And from Visma's perspective, that it was really, really good because, no Van Baal, you get your prospect up the road. I really thought this, not the biggest break. Like, it wasn't 15 guys, but damn, it was super strong. Like, what if Asgreen's on his Tour de France week 3 day like last year? Where he just rode on the front all the time. So it was, a really dangerous breakaway. It really was because, I'll repeat again, Heyman entered sector one and won the race from the break. Eventually he got caught, obviously, but he entered sector one with a 55-second gap in 2016. You don't need 5 minutes for it to play a big role.
That is very true, but it's also a feeling of like, The comparison when it comes to the breakaway formation compared to other years, sometimes it's as simple as a group forms and then Alpecin reacts to the next one and the next rider is like, ah, shit, Alpecin's in my wheel, so I stop. And suddenly there's a gap of 15 seconds that everybody was looking for in like a split moment that people aren't reacting, that it suddenly forms. And people can keep attacking to try and bridge towards that, but it became quickly clear that Alpecin wanted to control whatever was up the road as the breakaway. I wanted to keep it at that by reacting to counter moves. And I feel like Little Trek also was kind of vibing with trying to control the breakaway a little bit at first. But before we get to that, I've got a question for you. I've got a very important question. With your current fitness, you can't finish full Roubaix. But would you say that with your Fabio Jakobsen sprint training on Join, would you be able to make the breakaway
in Roubaix? I mean, Benji, I know we're doing a read for Join, but like, come on. With Asgreen, I weigh under 70 kilos.
Remember, it's Gasper Pedersen now.
okay, but still, it's going to be doing 70 k's an hour. But yes, but this is the beauty of that Fabio Jakobsen sprint plan that I'm doing, which I was really happy about, is that I've still got most of the workouts are the workouts I wanted to be doing in preparation for summer. 2x20 minute zone 3. It's still a gradual build-up. It's not a track program. It's as if you improve your sprint with sprint-specific workouts each week, which I did earlier in the week. But then you still have to build your endurance. You still need to be more efficient at threshold to get in races or in your group rides or when Benji comes to the Andorra Enduro so I can smoke him in the Townsend sprint.
Hey!
What, you think this ain't free, buddy? You think he's going to rock up here and we're going to cruise around?
I'm ready for that downside sprint.
After I've done all this training. Yeah, actually, there are no places to do townside sprints in Andorra. Mate, the townside sprints are on the 10K climb.
I can't wait for the 25-second video on YouTube, Benji versus Patrick downside sprint.
Well, now we have to do it. So look out for that in the Jira. But if you want to, join... I did my best 5 minute power during a ramp test where you're doing uneven, you're going up every minute in power. I did my best 5 minute power during that ramp test on the trainer, by the way, not even with great ventilation, in 5 years after literally doing the recovery plan January and then my classics plan before we went to Flanders. So the plans for me have worked unbelievably well with the flexibility. Do I nail every workout every day perfectly? No. But I do 80%, 90%. I adjust, it's flexible, and I actually stay doing a plan, staying consistent, and it's really, really working for me. So if you want to try out Join, there's a 30-day free trial, no credit card required through the link down below, as well as 6-month discounted subscription, which I know some of you have already taken advantage of. after that free trial elapses. Thanks to Join for sponsoring our Roubaix coverage. And maybe in a year, Benji, I'll be in the Roubaix breakaway. I mean, the way Visma went this year.
they might call you up.
you can be my rider agent. Or Jim, the CEO of Join, can be my rider agent. Okay, back to the breakaway. Were you surprised to see that? Oh, sorry, there was a crash.
Yes, there was a crash behind the breakaway. That is true. And the peloton had multiple crashes, to be honest, throughout this race. But, you know, it was a bigger one that included Tim Melier, Laurens Rex, my man to win. Sorry, but I feel like I'm cursed here, okay? Not the Rex, not the one on the floor. I'm the cursed one here. On a serious note, really sad to see Rex, Merlier, Bettiol, Milan, Viviani, all those riders on the floor. Multiple Lotto riders involved as well. I think there was like 20 riders on the ground. Couldn't count them all, but Milan abandons. Viviani abandons. Milan abandoning actually has a consequence on this race, I reckon. Like, I was expecting Milan to play a role in team-based stuff when it comes to Trek. That was my opinion going into this race, and him going away takes that opportunity away. Rex being out of this race is fucking sad. I'm not going to lie. I was hoping he would win, but I was hoping for him to be that dark horse win, but it ain't happening. So that crash happened, and I'm going to say it already. Rex later crashes again over like a traffic island thing with amazing yellow padding on it. So props to that, because that made him flip over it, but in a relatively fashionable way. Otherwise, he straight up hits the post. So I'm glad that padding was there, is what I'm trying to say. But anyway, back to you. Little Trek, was that the question?
Well, when this is what often happens. The break was at 25, 30 seconds. And then when there's a big crash in the peloton, then the break gets another 30 for free, because everyone's like, what's happened? Who's in my team this crash? It was a big crash. And you're tiling down, like a lot of guys down. Milan eventually got up. He got up, then was out of the race. So I don't know if he broke something, collarbone, whatever, but he was up quickly. But yeah, Viviani looked really, really bad. I hope he's okay. It's been a terrible week for 2 weeks for crashes. And so this break is gone. I was surprised though. Milan out. Yep. MVP dominant in Flanders. Alpecin team is stacked here, by the way, as well. Yes. And Trek put De Klerk on the front and does, I would say, over 50% of the pulling behind the breakaway. I was like, why are you helping Alpecin? They got all these, mate, they find these guys at Kermesses. I pay them 50 grand and it doesn't matter what their name is. I swear to God, Plankart, Kierlich, Vermeersch, Riesbeek, it doesn't fucking matter. They get these guys in and these guys are going to enter every single sector, first five wheels. They're going to be in position on the crosswinds. They're going to, keep MVDP safe. Don't help them, because they're like, they're so good. But he's there helping.
Yeah, it's playing into the hand of Alpecin. I agree with you. Like, on one end, you could say that Pedersen is closer to being a co-favorite in this race compared to RVV. But I still wouldn't have done it. I still wouldn't have had little Trek pace, you know, because you're simply reducing the energy that Alpecin has to spend before the cobbles arrive while increasing the energy you spend before the cobbles arrive. So that's the conclusion on that. And vroom, we're now at the cobble sector. Yes, I fast-forwarded the race. 160K to go. Sector 29, Trois-Villages-Chi is the first sector. And, mate, there's one person that's not at this race that has been sick for a week or a week and a half that couldn't ride RVV that is probably the most cursed rider in this race. Is it being cursed or is the skill issue?
Oh, it's not just bad luck. Like Laporte, he literally first call sector, bang, flat, see you, out of the race, gone. Because listen, I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's the way they're flatting him in particular. Yeah. But like, how many times does an Alpecin rider flat in the first 50% of a sector and not make it through the sector close to where they can then choose to repair their mechanical at a good time, like Philipsen did today. Philipsen flatted on Arenberg, but he still was not fully flat. And so I don't know what it is, but yeah, like Laporte and Alpecin just start smashing. They have, as I said, Plankart, Kierlich, Riesbeek in particular, Philipsen, Vermeers, Van der Poel, the whole team's at the front, and they are obliterating the gap to this breakaway. Like, they are in position, launching it every single sector, going so, so, so fast. And there's splits. Like, Laporte, he's not coming back because he's flatted. It's a 2.5K sector. You have to wait, ride that whole sector on the flat slowly. Race is over. There's other riders flatting. There's other riders crashing. Risebik, I think, had a flat or crash, but they just continue smashing. And I can't remember where the exact, before which sector the crosswinds were, but they even sent it in some crosswinds.
Sir, you got to mention the legendary puncture of Gleb Siriza on the second sector. Come on, gets called by the peloton. I don't know why Wellens was suddenly at the front of the peloton on the second sector, sector 28, Vieslia Kievi. But anyway, you're right. There were echelons, and it's after sector 27, Kievia Saint-Piton. It's a sector where, on the sector itself, yeah, they were already pushing Alpecin, like you mentioned, on multiple sectors, Alpecin pushing, keeping tempo, but I felt like it was hard tempo, and I felt like Vermeers wasn't just doing tempo. He was doing tempo-tempo, and tempo-tempo is harder than tempo. So that's what Vermeers was doing. After the sector, they keep rolling, like you mentioned, in an echelon formation, and what I don't know is, was Pedersen gapped at the end of the cobble sector or in the echelons just after? Because I saw the split after, but I'm not sure where Pedersen was caught up in the second, whether it was on the cobbles or in the wind.
I'm not sure. It was, I think it could have been, the answer's kind of both. Like, there's a little gap and then Alpecin just rip it, and then after the cobbles and they turn right into that cross. Like, Alpecin didn't even, Van der Poel said after the race, oh, we didn't really have like a plan exactly. They really feel the race. No, like, yeah, they start riding and then they're, oh, there's a strong crosswind here. We're all in position. And they just start sending because they're all in good position. So why not send it? And yeah, yeah, that ends Laporte. That makes Pedersen have to come back as well. And Pedersen, yeah, has to pull back himself, basically. Tarling has mechanical at this point, which is he made that group. There's still, I don't know where they catch the breakaway.
Well, the breakaway is caught basically 5 kilometers after Sector 4, the Vieslia Biriastre sector, and that's after that mechanical of Tarling, and so with about 142 kilometers to go, and up till now, only one notable thing happened next to what we said, which was basically a crash of Risebeek on one of the sectors, which takes away a potential rider as domestique for Alpecin. I don't know whether Risebeek was able to come back or not from that, because there were a lot of Alpecin riders, and I couldn't figure out who was who all the time, but Kilic was at the front then, and Vermeers was still there, and there were so many riders of Alpecin at the front that they were clearly well represented. And the next point is related to that mechanical of Darling. We see a shot from the helicopter where there's an Ineos car vibing through a road, like vroom, like crazy. And apparently Tarling was holding onto the car, holding onto the bidon. I don't know. Well,
not apparently, you could see.
Yeah, no, was it the car alleged or the bidon?
I think he had a bidon.
Okay. So is it as bad as Nibali then? Because Nibali Vuelta held onto the car, no?
That was worse. Don't that was worse.
Come on. Give this to an Nibali fan. He did an Nibali, come on.
It was funny listening to Eurosport comms, because they were like, oh, that's a long sticky bottle, calling it out. And then they went, oh, for Tarling, we shouldn't have mentioned that. Because Blythe was like, he was having a shocker today, but I didn't know what was going on. But the, and then I knew he'd get done. Because
yeah,
if you're caught on camera holding the bit on or the car that long, then you're going to, on camera, it's all over. Generally speaking. Now, sitting behind the car, like Eckhoff, I have to mention Eckhoff or Luke will get mad. Sitting behind the car, it's luck of the draw. They'll probably turn a blind eye to it if you just sit behind there too long and it's not on camera too long.
But I will ask you the question, though. Like, when I was at Tourmontalia, when I was in the team car, shit happens behind the scenes that is not on camera, where you've got people holding onto cars, you've got people holding onto stick bottles. Anyway, we've got, He's back.
I'm back. I don't know what happened. Shit happens, Benji. That's all I heard. And so I dipped.
I was asking you, how many people did what Tarling did, but not on camera today?
Today in the race, at least 15, at least 20 riders. Yeah, what? You think turns and those guys just come back after a flat. They have a flat and then you see them back in the back of the group in 2 minutes. You're like, come on. But don't get caught on camera. So it's unfair in that sense, but also not unfair because I think everyone knows the... Really, like, if you ask most of the DSs, if you get seen doing that for that long, will you get DSQ'd on camera? I think most of them will say yes. So mate, I don't think it's
because you just got DSQ'd on camera.
Exactly. So Tarling's out of the race. That's a shame for him. I would have liked to see how far he could have gone to the race. Breakaway's been caught, which is crazy. 1:30 gap. Alpecin closed it after four sectors or so. They closed to Asgreen, Tiller, Haganez, Malecki, like crazy. And they still have riders. That's unbelievable.
I do want to note because, like, we're now 120k to go, sector 23 to 21. We're not at the Truid Ironberg, not at the Forest of Valers yet. And Alpecin is controlling that group of 40 that just got the breakaway, including the breakaway riders. Being in the breakaway still helped, right? Because, like,
yeah.
Would someone like, let's say, Leon Slok?
Haganez or Slok don't make the split, I don't think.
So it helped, I guess, because I don't know where Hagen has got in the race at the end because I think he had a puncture somewhere, or was it not him?
Yeah, maybe. But the point is, like, he went deeper into the race, same with Schlock, than he would have otherwise. Because if you go into the first four sectors, Saint-Pithon or Briast, probably you don't make the split. And we see in that group going towards Havelier Waller. I couldn't believe it. I thought Pedersen's there. Alpecin will slow down. I was like, why would they keep pushing Benji? Like, Laporte's at like 2 minutes. Forget about him. Why would they keep pushing here before Haveluy? And I thought you'd see an FDJ anticipation, but they couldn't because Alpecin kept pacing at 55 kilometers an hour all the way through Dunant, all the way to Haveluy-Ouellet with Vermeersch, with Kierlich. And no one could do anything because in theory, okay, the break is caught. Surely if you're Askey, if you're a Van Dijk brother, if you're a Jordi Meus, if you're Fred Wright, you're thinking, fuck, do I want to go to Arenberg with Pedersen and Van der Poel? Not particularly. Or Haveluy-Ouellet. And so you try to get ahead, but no one could. Like, the pace was too high to do anything.
Exactly. And I got to be honest, then like a series of mechanicals started happening, right? You've got Ford having a mechanical, Segaard, Van Gestel, all these riders eventually, I think eventually all three of them might have actually returned from that. And then Kielich nearly rides into a wall in one of the corners, but this is all in the run-in towards those sectors, like you mentioned, Haveluy-Ouellet, Ardenberg. And then we've got it. The magical knot chicane. I got to be honest, when the group was 35 riders, I expected them to go through it like smooth butter. Like, if 80 to 100 people go there, then you will have trouble, I think. But 35? Should be okay, right?
Yeah, and it was. There's no issues. Like, but seriously, if a full peloton went to that chicane, I'm not saying there'd be crashes, but your race is completely over.
And
your race is finished if you're behind P30.
What are the odds that the people that put the chicane there for safety are going to be tonight like, oh, we did it. We solved the issue. We solved the problem, the safety of Ironman, because it went well this time around with 35 people.
Well, I mean, did the chicane being there and Van der Poel not wanting to risk it mean that that's why Alpecin pushed so hard, not wanting a full peloton into after Haveluy? So in this, because it influenced Alpecin's behavior, maybe it did inadvertently make it safer. I don't know. And certainly on Arenberg, we didn't see, by the way, the group, whatever group behind this group of 30, 40 riders, we never see another single rider of them.
Narnia.
Ever again. Like the first sectors, they're finished. So just pretend they don't exist. So maybe there were crashes on Arenberg in that group. I don't know. Or the chicane. We only saw one run of the chicane on Arenberg. Yeah. Van Dijk, Mick Van Dijk's in good position. Tim Van Dijk's in good position. Hagen is the lead out for them. And MVDP starts opening up. Pedersen, Philipsen, Mick Van Dijk there. Tim Van Dijk has the mechanical. MVDP's already gapping Pedersen on the Arenberg, and he's not really trying. He's just kind of doing it his own pace, and he's putting him on a gap, and Pedersen looked like he was really blowing. So, and Philipsen's right there in the wheel. So we come out of the Arenberg, Van der Poel, Pedersen, Philipsen, Mick van Dijk. Was there an FDJ or not?
I don't know, actually.
Pedersen, and they start rolling. Pedersen starts pulling. Van Dijk won't pull. And in fact, they only stop when Philipsen has that mechanical where he's like, oh, he tells Van der Poel, and then Van der Poel stops. Yep. So the group comes back. And this is this phase from here to maybe Vorlanger Brion. It's not Spanish, Brillon, I don't know. Is this 20K this 20K phase is the riskiest for Albertson in the race. Because Philipsen's back. Kielich and Riesebeek are gone. Vermeersch is there. But there's actually quite a lot of riders. There's multiple UAE Wellens Pollitt. There's Tiller Vorenskjold. There's three Vismas. There's Pithy Kung Aski. There's Segart, Slok, Bora. And now Philipsen's off the back, coming back from a mechanical, and there's actually quite a few bit of tarmac sectors. This was the risky part for them.
But I will say, I think initially they handled it perfectly. As in, Van der Poel was still ahead in that group of four. Then the group of Philipsen was behind that. And we got to keep in mind that at this point, Vermeers is also there. Van der Poel stops when Philipsen has that puncture, stops pacing at the front. Philipsen is out of the group with Vermeers. Then the first two groups come together while Vermeers is behind. And then in that first group, while Philipsen is behind, sorry. And that first group, Vermeers starts trying to control the things that happen. But that's when I think the first little mistake of Alpecin occurs, where Vermeers does an attack. Then it looked like he was being called back, no? Like he stopped his attack in the middle of his attack and looked backwards.
Well, because Pedersen was behind because he had a mechanical.
And so this was before Pedersen's mechanical, when Philipsen was still behind.
Okay.
Well, yeah, when Vermeersch went with three riders, with Pollitt and Kung, if I recall.
Yeah, so he jumped, Pollitt, Kung joined him, and you see that oh shit moment from Vermeersch, like, oh, I didn't actually mean to bridge two of the strongest rulers in the race. And you can tell this is the only maybe mistake Albertson made, or because it was a masterclass from them today. But this is the only place where you see MVDP mildly uncomfortable. And this is why Trek bailed them out. Watch MVDP's behavior as that group of three are going. It's the only time he started to panic a bit.
Yeah.
Where he started to jump towards them. And you know what he did? He thought, fuck it, I'll let Pedersen come back. They'll put Vácek on the front. I got Vermeersch up the road and it all's going to be gravy. And that's exactly what happened. But there was a moment there where he thought, ooh, I actually don't want Kung and Pollitt to just go and get 2 minutes for free.
Yep.
Because no one else is going to help Van der Poel. No one else was chasing, even if they weren't represented. They're not going to help him. But Vácek comes back with Pedersen. Trek put him on the front. And happy days for Alpecin.
Turns even comes in. Keeps helping as well. And it's really Trek that pool, Van der Poel and Philipsen, back to the group of Vermeersch. So the same strategy, to be honest, that Milan was pulling on Alpecin, on Van der Poel himself in Gent-Wevelgem, is what Alpecin is now applying on Trek, which is, I don't know, like, on one end you can say, if Trek don't close it, who will? But on the other end, like, if you're scared that a group of Vermeersch, Kung, and Pollitt are up the road.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Then you have to choose between putting your man at the front and playing into Van der Poel's hand, or daring to make it uncomfortable for Van der Poel and Alpecin by having them in the car start to stress about Vermeersch versus Pollitt versus Kung, you know?
Exactly. I would have, unless you really think you're equal to Van der Poel, make it an Alpecin problem. Because what would Alpecin do? What would Van der Poel do?
I don't know. I think he would use Vermeer as a satellite rider from that point onwards.
He would attack, but then he, on an easier cobbled sector, 75, 80 k's to go, he would attack. He would create a split, but then he would have to work on the tarmac sections to get across, most likely. So, yeah, Trek were riding. It's like what happened in E3, basically. But it was also a badly timed mechanical. And so, yeah, Pollard and Kung, they're also not fully committing. The Pedersen actually starts to close that group of Kung and Pollard themselves into sector 15. And basically, to me, the race actually gets quite straightforward here. Those two are closed down. Other riders try to anticipate, like Wellens, like maybe a Van Dijk or a Hagenes. Vermeersch is all over it. Like Vermeersch and he's just covering everything once it comes back. He's in such good shape. Pithy's also trying to move. But no one's able to get anywhere. And we get to Orshi and Vermeersch gets on the front, paces. Van der Poel does the attack where he comes in around and then in front of him. And then Vermeersch obviously can't follow. And Van der Poel goes away on Orshi, which is one of the two sectors I think he might have attacked on, Orshi last year or the year before. He goes, and that's really, from what we've seen in E3 and Tour of Flanders, that's the race over.
But I found it a really, really brutal attack. The way he was able to create a separation that was so significant so quickly on Orshi, that was like great to see. Like the
it's
gap
a three-star
that he
sector,
made.
No?
Yeah, it's not a 4 or 5 star sector. Orshi is 4 star, Orshi is 3 star. So he's doing it on the Orshi sector, and the gap was quite significant. I felt like he immediately made a five to ten second gap.
Yeah.
With his attack on the cobbles itself, and you see that it's like he's like sprinting half in the saddle on the cobbles while doing that attack, like a seated kind of sprint. Was it 50 seconds at 1500 watts?
It was a lot of watts for a lot of time because, then he keeps going. Pedersen tries to close it, but then I don't think people were relaying with him on the tarmac afterwards. Yeah. And we immediately see the race is over because, the group behind's not cooperating. There's Philipsen and Vermeersch just denying everybody, marking everybody. So what are you going to do? You got the best sprinter in the world on your wheel. You got Vermeersch bodyguarding you and the Van Dijks or Visma aren't pulling and Kung and FTJ, they're not going to be enough, even if they do relay with Pedersen and Pollitt. He's also probably thinking of the podium correctly at that point. So that's the race.
Yep, that is the race. But I will say, yes, we're talking about Van der Poel riding away, but I think there was still something we need to note behind, as in the way Alpecin controlled behind, really impressive. You mentioned it already that he did it, but in the way that eventually a group forms, a chasing group with Pedersen, Kung, Piffy, and Pollard. Philipsen is in that group. And behind that, Vermeers is still controlling in the third group. And then eventually, we come to the point that the gap from Van der Poel to the group of Philipsen, Pedersen, Kung, Piffy, Pollard is so significant. We're talking 1.5 minutes, almost 2 minutes. It allows for the group three, which has Vermeers. The gap between them and group two is also quite significant. But bridgeable technically, and while Piffy crashes in group two, he's now out of that group. Vermeersch attacks behind from group three, and they basically start forming a group three behind the group of Pedersen, Kung, Pollitt, and Philipsen. You've got Vermeersch and Piffy behind that, and I'm not surprised that Vermeersch kept going because I'm perfectly fine. Van der Poel has won the race, there's nothing happening unless he's got bad luck or punctures or someone throws a cap in his wheel, because at 42 kilometers to go, there was an image of someone that it looked to me like they were on purpose throwing a cap in his wheel. No? Like,
yeah, it looked like that.
Like, for fuck's sake, man. Like, what gets in your head to do something? I can't get over that. These people are risking their lives already riding a sport that is so dangerous on cobble sectors that are crazy to ride on. He's on fucking Carrefour de l'Arbre. No, he's not on Carrefour de l'Arbre at that point. I think it was Orshi des Orshi or Mont-Saint-Pavel. One of the two.
It was late in the race. He was like had 2 minutes.
And to do that later, one other dude on Carrefour threw a beer at Van der Poel. Like, it's always the minor people. It's like one or two in a crowd of 1,000 or a crowd of 2,000, whatever, maybe more. But there's always a rotten apple somewhere that has to ruin it for everybody, and especially for the rider that is already putting everything on the plate and putting on an entertainment for us, even though, let's be honest, 50 kilometers solo, not the most entertaining. 60 kilometers solo, ooh-la-la. But I will say again, Vermeersch probably my MVP of this race.
Yeah, Vermeersch was so, so good. Like, he was unbelievably good. And what was strange was when Pithy had that crash. Because, yeah, when Pedersen created that split from the bigger group with, like, Mikkels and Wellens or Van Dijk in it, he... Kung then kept pulling with Pithy just dangling behind. That was very strange. Against Philipsen and Pedersen, who are quicker sprinters than him. Made no sense why Kung kept pulling. And it got worse because he got just straight up dropped on one of the last guys, Kampfampavel or Carfoot Labra. And so, yeah, he kind of flicked himself. Whereas I think Pollitt stopped pulling and basically Pedersen just pulled the entire time in Group 2 for the last 20Ks, backing himself in the final sprint. So, yeah. Van der Poel wins by 3 minutes. Huge, biggest margin for a long, long time. Ahead of his teammate Philipsen, so the same 1-2 as last year. Pedersen, a deserved podium. The third strongest guy in the race, or second strongest. Pollitt, fourth. Just couldn't beat them in the sprint. Kung finishes fifth. Vermeersch finishes sixth ahead of Pithy, who had a brave race. Tim van Dijk was eighth, but he got relegated in the... let's call it the bunch sprint.
Yeah.
Because he went onto the red. He went too far off the velodrome, yeah, which he didn't really need to do. I don't know why he did it.
I agree. Like, sure, if that's a rule, then yes, he went off course technically to surpass people. But sorry, but to me, it is not clear at all that the parkour ends where the blue line ends on the velodrome. That is not clear to me. That has never been clear to me when it comes to Paris-Roubaix. I don't think that's heavily pointed out to the riders either. There's no way Van Dijk can do that.
Yeah, but
I think that sucks. Sorry.
I thought when he did it, I was like, yeah,
I feared it, but it's a fucking shame, and I don't think he deserved that. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, and also, like, it's not like it was a loss by a wheel in the bunch sprint, so he won easily with stopping pedaling. But anyway, Mayus eighth, Vareskjold ninth, Mathis Mikkels actually finishes top 10 in Roubaix. Degenkolb, Wright, Van Hestel, Fedorov, Wellens, on that group. Pidcock, very brave, finishes 17th after starting. Good to see him finish with no crashes or whatnot. And yeah, that was the race. So Van der Poel has 5 races this year. 10th in San Remo, where he was maybe the strongest rider in the race, helping Philipsen win. 1E3 in a 40K solo. 2nd in Gent-Wevelgem when Trek worked him over. And then 1 Tour of Flanders and Roubaix back to back. He's now won 3 Tour of Flanders, 2 Roubaix. In the last year, he's won Roubaix twice, Flanders World Championships, Cyclocross World Championships, Milan San Remo, if you count an extra month. So he is. Van der Poel's improved a lot. If you compare to like 2021 and 2022. Van der Poel has improved a lot in the last year and a half, and he's clearly the best classics rider in the world, and probably in terms of like level, eras, it's different because everyone's going to get faster. Like the guys coming 10th now finish Roubaix faster than the guys 30 years ago. But in terms of level of a classics rider, he's probably the best ever in history.
It's only a matter of time in the next year or the next 2 years or the next 3 years that he surpasses the current record of RVV winners. I think winning 4 times would be a record, if I recall correctly. Paris-Roubaix, you've got Bonum with 4. It is not unlikely that Mathieu van der Poel equals that by the end of his career. We're talking about a rider that unironically will, in my opinion, likely end his career with a palmarès the same or higher, probably higher considering the CX he has next to that, than Tom Bonum in classics, which that's crazy to say. As a Flemish person, even though, let's be honest about it, Mathieu van der Poel is Flemish now. We've claimed him a few years ago. So according to Sportza, he is Flemish now. So Luke is not going to agree with that, but I'm saying it anyway. He's one of the best classics riders ever at this point, right? If not one of the best riders ever. Yeah, where would you put him in, like, it's difficult because we don't know the old era of cycling very well. Like, I got to be honest about myself. I know the last 15 years of cycling, last 23 years of cycling, maybe. I know quite well what happened and when. But before that, sorry, but I'm not an expert on that at all.
Benji, to the point that I'll fill you in on something.
Okay.
I never even watched Tom Boonen win a race.
Oh, fuck off.
Well, I didn't. I wasn't mate, watching then.
I literally, 8 days ago, was sat on my couch and I was like, let me rewatch World Championships 2005 and see Boonen win.
Maybe I watched the San Juan win in 2017. And I was like, is this Max Richese's predecessor? This fella, yeah, when he's last win in 2017.
You got to keep in mind, also when it comes to like, is it weird? Like, I'm not a fond man. I'm not a man that is fond of sports watching in any way, but I miss the echelon-infested tour of Qatar. Every stage were echelons, man.
Yeah, and even the World Championships, there were echelons. Are you trying to say that Tom Boonen's tour of Qatar wins put him... Is that why he's above MVP?
Yes. No, wait. Let me have this. Okay. Let's start off. Stibar versus Van Avermaet. Who has the best bomb rest?
Stibar versus Van Avermaet?
Yeah. Pretty easy, right?
It's Van Avermaet, no? He won a monument.
Yeah. Van Avermaet versus... this will be before... I was going to say Ballon or something, but that's before your time. Van Avermaet versus Sagan.
Sagan, easily.
Sagan versus Wout van Aert.
Sagan.
Sagan Felipe, versus...
Felipe Pozzardo against Wout van Aert.
Ooh, Wout van Aert. I don't remember Pozzardo's palmarès, so...
E3, Omloop, San Remo, GC, Tirreno, Plouay, two stages of the tour.
Okay. Sagan versus Van der Poel.
Van der Poel.
Right now already?
Yeah.
I think by the end of his career, yes. But right now, I'm not sure yet. Because three times world champions, plus Roubaix, plus RVV. It's close.
Yeah, 12 tour stages. But yeah, you're right.
Seven green jerseys.
Gabriel does all the ranking of all this. So there's like, he weights all the points and stuff. But Sagan never rode in the classics. He was never this dominant like Van der Poel. Why are all the old like pros so immature? Like, why are they lacking himself? Is that maybe it's part of what it takes to be so good, you know, to get out after winning two times a monument in a row, to go out and still train 6 hours every day to do it again. Maybe you do have to be a little bit like that. But is that Boonen, for context, what did Boonen say, Benji? Was it taken out of context when it was translated to English?
I honestly don't remember. Don't remember what he said.
I think he said, I did what Mathieu van der Poel, whole palmarès, I did it in a year.
You need to add, the context that needs to be added is the following. It was discussion, firstly, about the amount of days preparation that riders now have, saying that they now ride very little races compared to what Boonen did back in the day. And as a conclusion to that, Boonen went and like half jokingly said, well, I did what Van der Poel has done in the palmarès, Van der Poel's palmarès in a year. Half jokingly said, but you half jokingly say that when your pride wants to say that, in my opinion.
And Nibali having a go at Luca Virgolito, who is a good rider and deserves an opportunity. Like, why are you punching down like that? Like, what is, and it's just, they're losers. They're like, they won so much. This is a little rant I've been holding in for a while.
Yeah.
Because there was not, honestly, there wasn't much to talk about the race. Like, Van der Poel's just so fucking good. But like, these people, despite winning so much, they're still losers.
Yeah.
You can, as a person.
I think it's two things. I think, first of all, we probably underrate the amount of journalists that ask them questions specifically about something
to
that leads
themselves
to such a sentence. So for example, I'm now Fabian Cancellara, and press officer, a press person, fucking someone from Sportza goes to me and asks, okay, Fabian, what do you think about Wout van Aert's, the reason that he's not doing what Van der Poel is doing? And Cancellara needs to answer to that, and his take was along the lines of, he should do less throughout the season like Van der Poel. Now, of course, he's saying that in exactly the year that Wout van Aert is literally doing as little as possible and only focusing on two races. So it was the worst fucking timing ever. And it that makes it sound like he's trying to kind of give his like Like he's got, I feel, it makes it feel like he's punching down towards Wout van Aert that he's doing something wrong. That's how it makes it feel.
Yeah, but I don't know how much of that. He has no idea, Cancellara. He's clueless.
Well, I think we've seen quite a few articles of Cancellara last year that I would say wasn't the best advice.
Like, I'm sorry, but Van der Poel is like, I think we shouldn't underestimate. If you look at the history of how dominant he was today and in Tour of Flanders and in E3, like, he destroyed everybody. Of course, Alpecin today as a team were also by far the strongest team, by far. But he still did a 60-kilometer solo in Roubaix behind, you know, in front of really strong guys, Mads Pedersen, Niels Pollitt, Steffen Kung. You don't just, those guys aren't doing 200 watts on the flat. So, yeah, like doing a race here or there, like Van der Poel is so, so good. And the only person that could challenge him, it seemed like, at Tour of Flanders would have been a full-form Poggy. Yep. He didn't go this year. I would have been keen to see how Pidcock actually went at Flanders after finishing top 20 here. Like,
yep.
Yeah. But yeah, that's sort of the old legends discussion. It's like death. It's the limelight so on Van der Poel, and he is so good that it's, I guess maybe, yeah, they feel threatened by him.
I think it's partially the press aspect, but also many, they've got a pride that they want to protect. They look at their palmarès and they're like, oh, I was fucking good. And they have an issue with someone of the current era coming close to that palmarès. And then they try and minimize the achievements of who is now sometimes. But I also feel like sometimes you do hear them. You do hear them some, like Bonen has been very like, positive about Van der Poel's career. That's why that one statement felt so off, off pace compared to the others. So that's why I'm somewhat defending him in that regard. But I don't know. With Cancellara, I'm not so sure about that. Whether it goes both ways.
Oh, the Nibali one was definitely malicious.
Yeah,
that one.
Nibali can't handle people getting stuff that he did or doing stuff better than him. That's for sure. He's a bit of a snake.
Oh, you're out on him, I guess.
Yeah, I love Nibali, and I love him because
I love watching him race. I love his tactics, but yeah.
But also, I loved it because he was a fucking snake. But that he was like, oh, Roglic, I'll come to my house. I'll show you my trophy, stuff like that. That's why I love Nibali, because he was fucking crazy.
I wish, that's the thing. I wish there was more shit talking in the current riders.
Exactly.
Like, it would make it much more interesting to me, but because I would tune in for the press conferences, maybe. I know the sponsors don't want that, but I do wish there was more shit talking. But like American sports, maybe that's the beauty of cycling.
Lastly,
yeah,
Sagan versus Van der Poel palmarès right now.
I haven't looked at I haven't compared them.
Out of that, 3 seconds.
Sagan, but by the end of next year, it'll be Van der Poel.
Fair, I agree.
Yeah, I don't know how you wait a Tour of Flanders versus a Tour de France stage.
Wow, Tour of Flanders is much more than Tour de France stage. Dude.
No,
come
no,
on,
but like how
here.
Many is it? 3-1? Like what's the ratio, you know?
Nah, a bit more.
It's not more than 3-3 Seven. Tour de France. Sorry, Benji, but like no offense to the Tour of Flanders, but it's not that big.
I'd rather win Paris-Roubaix than 7 Tour de France stages.
To get paid? I would rather win the Tour de France stage sequentially.
But I'm talking about
Palmares don't get you a house deposit. This is why I don't know why these guys are all so agitated. They all made so much money. They have incredible Palmares. Relax.
Exactly.
Like Trentin, low-key, very, very nice career. If you worry about his contracts and his Palmares, like I wouldn't mind. I'll take Trentin. I'll take that.
Soler?
I mean, we've gone a bit. I like Mark's a great writer. I do have Mark Soler and Roubaix, I guess. Well, should we cover the?
What are we gonna cover, dude? What?
No. The boring discourse. Like, I think you're entitled if you in the last hour of the race when Van der Poel's 2 minutes ahead to be like, this is as a spectacle. There is not. It's not particularly enthralling in terms
Fuck
of suspense. Yeah, there's not particularly enthralling. It's like Mads Pedersen and the fight for second and third. That is true on the one hand. We can have two things true at the same time. That's true on the one hand. And on the other hand, all we've just said about Van der Poel in terms of history, it's an incredible achievement. He is already up there with the greats, even if his career stopped today. You know, even they never won Roubaix like this, this dominant. So the two things can be true at the same time.
But my opinion on it is, firstly, solely with this Paris-Roubaix, I found it a good Paris-Roubaix until about 5 to 10 kilometers after Vanderpool attacked, because then I'm like, I might as well turn off the TV. Like, I enjoy watching him roll into the velodrome, but I don't really care about seeing him roll over the other sectors that much anyway from this point on. It's like, I think it's partially because Patrick's run off again. He's run off again. But I think it's partially about the fact that we've gotten so used of these crazy solos in the last 3 years, of these crazy things that happened, that it doesn't feel as special anymore when someone goes on a 60, 50 kilometer solo, because you're like, oh, the entertainment's gone, which I think is a fair opinion to have. And it goes both ways, as in, on one end, a race can be so close with so little action like the Giro last year that it's boring, and it being close doesn't make it entertaining if nothing's happening. So that's one thing. And on the other end, when there's such a clear favorite to the point that he's ahead already at that point in the race, when it's clear that he's going to win, it's okay to find that boring. You don't have to lie about it just because some people on the internet or on TV are telling you, ah, oh, this is, we're watching a spectacle, you're never going to see something like this again. But the next week I'll put on my fucking TV and Vanderpool attacks with 60 kilometers to go again. Like, sorry, but I've seen it last week. Come on.
I mean, I also don't think the race was that, I'm sorry, but since the team time trial with 175Ks to go, and then they launched him on Oshii and the race was over. Like, yeah, it wasn't that much going on either. So, but that's fine, you know, sort of. I am a little bit worried about with the, it's not been great with crashes the last 2 weeks, but that's also part of the sport. You know, some years are better than others. 2021, the Grand Tours were not so good, but who knows what will happen. But certainly Alpecin de Koenig, after being a Pro Conti team just 2 years ago, they now, they're the first team, I think, maybe ever to win the first three monuments of the season. So they're making history themselves. And who knows, maybe Van der Poel will go to Liège. Maybe he'll go to Lombardia. I think it'll be a bit more difficult for him to win them, but Quinten Hermans is certainly looking better. So who knows? In Liège, he could win. I don't know, is Poggy doing Liège?
He should be, right?
Yeah, hopefully. Now Remco's crashed. Fucking hell. Yeah, so a bit tough. Anyway, next, what do we got on this week? Are we going to cover Brabant Chappelle on Wednesday?
I'm down. It's a good race, usually. We'll do it. Come on.
Ineos aren't doing it this year.
Get out of your fucking bed. Let's do it.
It's a bit of a weaker start list this year. I don't know why. I think... let's see the start list.
I don't actually know who's going.
It's, not so good. No Visma, no Ineos. But I think Mark Hirsch is going to clean that. And then we have...
It's a pro race, right?
He
can.
Dot pro. And then we have after that the Ardennes starting in earnest. That's the bridge from the Flemish Classics to the Ardennes is Brabant-Chappelle. And then we have Amstel Gold Race that weekend, and the next Wednesday is Flesh, then there's Liège-Bastogne-Liège. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed the Roubaix recap. We might see you with a weekly show tomorrow evening. You can mark that down in your little calendars anyway to keep you going, because as Benji said, I'm not allowed to rest. But until then, ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.